Good morning and welcome to News 24 Listen Live. I'm Lamise Umurji, Climate Editor. This week, the UN Climate Talks, or COP28, kicks off in the United Arab Emirates. The official program starts on Thursday, 30 November, and it will run until the 12th of December. It's said to be the largest UN climate change conference ever held, with more than 70,000 participants, including climate activists, NGOs, a range of leaders, including the Pope, and South Africa is among the many governments that are sending delegations. But why does it matter, and how is it going to impact South Africa's climate future? We'll be discussing this today, and joining us from Dubai is climate scientist Dr. Chris Tresos. Welcome, Chris.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Chris, you're already in Dubai, and I'm thinking maybe you can share with us, for our listeners, to understand why people are already arriving in Dubai if the official program only kicks off on Thursday.
I think that there are a few reasons. The one is, with over 70,000 people coming, this is a massive event to organize. I arrived here early on Sunday morning, and arriving at the venue, you just see there are multiple football pitches of indoor area that are being set up with huge infrastructure around air conditioning, because it's not summer here, but it's still quite warm. And seating and workstations and negotiating rooms. So there's a lot of service personnel. And then many of the government delegates arrive a few days before so that they can caucus and organize positions within their negotiating blocks before the formal negotiations between different country groups start on Thursday.
Wow. You had me at football-sized like kind of spaces. You mentioned negotiations. Can you maybe just explain how a COP conference works? Like, why are there negotiations, and like, why are the outcomes important following these negotiations?
Sure. So the COP, or the Conference of the Parties, as the long name is called, has happened every year since, I think, 1995, when our COP28. Well, it didn't happen in 2020 because of COVID. There was a delay. But otherwise, it's happened every year since 1995. And it's based on the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, which was established in 1992 with the intention of preventing dangerous human interference in the climate in a way that prevents disruptions to our food systems and damages our ecosystems. So governments recognized the dangers of climate change before 1992. In 1992, they entered into this convention. And then every year since 1995, the countries that are members of that convention come together to negotiate their actions on climate change and their policies that they will take on climate change. And it's gone through various phases. And one of the most recent ones that many of us will have heard about is the Paris Agreement in 2015 that was agreed, where all the countries agreed to try and keep global warming well below 2 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels and pursue the best efforts to limit it to 1.5. And currently we're at about 1.15. We've had many negotiations. We haven't stopped or stabilized climate change yet, but they're still very important for getting government agreement globally on the actions that can be taken and the policies that can be set or need to be set in the future.
We'll discuss that 1.5 degree target a bit later. On the different topics that are going to be negotiated, I know something South Africa and a lot of other developing nations are pushing for is for a framework to be finalized for the global goal on adaptation. Can you maybe just unpack what this is and why it matters?
Sure. So we were just talking about the temperature goal of well below 2 degrees and countries pursuing best efforts to limit global warming to only 1.5 degrees Celsius increase, a goal that many of us have not heard about and has received a lot less attention. Is there's also this adaptation goal that was agreed in the Paris Agreement. And the point of the adaptation goal really is there's a lot of climate change that has happened already, and there's a lot of climate change still to happen. If we reduced our emissions today, climate change would only stabilize in about 20 years from now. because carbon dioxide has a long lifetime in the Earth system. And so carbon dioxide released into the atmosphere today warms the planet for many, many decades to centuries. So it's important that we adapt. And adapting is things like having vaccines for climate-sensitive infectious diseases like malaria and dengue fever. It's having more drought-tolerant crops. It's having more water use efficiency. It's having infrastructure, transport systems, trade systems, railways and harbors that are adapted to climate hazards like sea level rise or heavy rains and floods. And so this global goal on adaptation is really important in the context of climate change, making sure that we adapt adequately, so protect lives, protect ecosystems, protect livelihoods from climate change. And governments have given themselves a deadline, in a way, at this COP to agree on what that global goal, how it should be put into action. They call it operationalizing the global goal on adaptation. And so there's a lot of discussions going on here from Thursday and negotiations about what that goal will look like when it's put into action. And one of the important things is to have targets for that action. So to be specific and give times like the Sustainable Development Goals have done since 2015, you know, have specific targets on adaptation. We would like to do this type of adaptation by this date for these people, instead of just have very vague suggestions or priorities of things we might want to do.
Thanks. And I appreciate that you raised the impact of climate change on health and how that fits in with adaptation, you know, accessing vaccines people might need. Health is also it's been named a new theme this year at COP28. Can you maybe just weigh in on that? Do you think it kind of shows people that climate change has more direct effect on them because everyone cares about their health?
Yes, I'd hope so. So it's the first COP that will have a day that specifically has a theme around climate change and health. And I think what's useful to understand here is that the COP, it's not 70,000 people negotiating. There's just a few thousand from the governments that are negotiating, but then there's a whole kind of exhibition space and discussion space that happens around the negotiations. That's the many football fields of arena and conferencing center that I was talking about, where different organizations from the United Nations, the World Bank, the World Health Organization, the World Food Program, et cetera, different universities and countries have pavilions and exhibits about what they're doing to contribute towards climate solutions or what their suggestions are for the future. And so there will be a day where the theme around that will just be health. And I think it is really important to highlight how much climate change is already negatively affecting health, people's physical health, their mental health, their food security, their water security, and that we rapidly need to increase how we adapt to climate change risks to health in the future. In extreme cases, it's climate hazards that's leading to increased deaths, like we saw with the Durban floods, where you can have an extreme event and many hundreds of people can die in a short period of time from flooding or from a tropical storm. And in other cases, it's events that happen over a season, like the severe heat waves that happened in Europe last summer and this summer that have killed tens of thousands of people, where those heat waves are being made more intense by climate change. And it's especially the elderly and children and people with underlying health conditions who are at risk, often at night. Because with climate change, one thing that it does is it creates hotter nighttime temperatures. And so when people are sleeping, their bodies don't cool off and relax as much as they would otherwise.
Wow. For our listeners, if you want to know more about how climate change is impacting health, you can check out News24 Climate Future. We've got a few articles around that. I'd like to come back to the global goal on adaptation and maybe ask Chris, is this going to help developing nations secure the finance they need, you know, to roll out those adaptation projects that are so needed?
I would certainly hope so. I guess we'll have to see how the government negotiations evolve over the next couple of weeks. But absolutely, one of the biggest things constraining progress on adaptation is limited finance, and especially limited quality finance. So many developing countries, especially in the African context, have contributed very little to the greenhouse gas emissions driving climate change. South Africa, there is an exception. We're in the top 20 highest historical greenhouse gas polluters. And so we have a big responsibility in the future to reduce fossil fuel emissions. I'm getting slightly onto mitigation now, but from an adaptation perspective, absolutely there's this real need for affordable finance. So that's the developing countries, and in this case would very much include South Africa, are not put further into debt by having to borrow at high interest rates to take adaptation actions, but instead that affordable and sufficient finance is made available for the adaptation options that they need in the current climate and under future climates. And so we'll have to see how negotiations evolve, but it's definitely something to aim for, and something that is needed to accelerate adaptation action is quality finance.
Yeah, I think for our listeners, what often happens on the sidelines of COP is that different nations, let's say developed nations, make a lot of pledges and say how they're going to help developing nations. And that's why finance is such a, you know, kind of not a key, but it, you could say it's a key part of these discussions. And just, Chris, what do you think? Do you think this means that you can't really have meaningful climate action without, you know, resources or means, or financial means of support to respond to it?
Finance is a critical enabler of climate action and one of the most contentious subjects in the negotiation, because it's linked with often with aspects of equity. So many of the developed countries have historically been the highest emitters, and many of them are still very high emitters, such as the United States, many European countries. And so a lot of the negotiations in many different ways come down to who has the responsibility historically to take more of the burden of reducing the greenhouse gas emissions, but also providing the resources to others to be resilient to climate change. And so absolutely, the scientific assessments and the research assessments are also very clear that there is sufficient global capital to close the climate change investment gap, but there needs to be much stronger signaling from governments, clear policies, and global policies around directing that capital to climate action if we're going to meet the challenge of limiting global warming well below 2 degrees or to 1.5 degrees Celsius.
So last year at COP27, there was kind of a breakthrough when the different parties agreed that a loss and damage fund should be established. And basically, this fund is supposed to help poor nations that don't have the resources to manage the impacts of extreme weather events caused by climate change. It's to kind of help them manage these impacts. Chris, can you maybe just share more on what the next steps are for the loss and damage fund at this COP? Like, what do we need to look out for at these negotiations?
So I'm not an expert on the loss and damage negotiations, and I'm not involved in those in any way. I think what I would comment on is that it should be a fund that is sufficiently financed. So I think a lot of the concerns from those observing the negotiations at the moment are that while the fund might be established, that there would not be sufficient finance put into the fund. And there's some precedent for this in the negotiations previously, in that many, many years ago, a fund for adaptation was established, but it has received much, much less funding into it from developed countries than is required to meet the adaptation challenges of developing countries. And so I think one of the big things to look out for is what kind of negotiation outcome happens with regard to who will put funding in and how much, and also what pledges are made around the event over the next couple of weeks about who's contributing funding and how much, and if it's thought that it might be even close to what is needed.
Yeah, we'll definitely be following that. Another big thing that's happening is that the global stock take is going to be released. Can you maybe share what this is and why it's important to guide future climate action?
So the global stock take is something countries agreed to undertake when they agreed to the Paris Agreement in 2015. And they said that every so often they would have a process of assessment on making progress towards these goals of limiting global warming well below 2 degrees and pursuing efforts for 1.5, to adapting to climate change and around sufficient finance for climate action. And they agreed that the first one of those would happen in 2023. So it's important because it's the first organized assessment by countries of their progress towards the Paris Agreement goals. And it sets the precedent for what subsequent ones might be like in terms of process in many ways. It'll be important to follow negotiation outcomes on that and seeing how that evolves. One of the things that the technical part of the global stock take has been very clear on is that globally, countries are well off track for reducing their emissions fast enough and a great enough magnitude of reductions to limit global warming well below 2 or to 1.5, and also that there's way insufficient finance to date for climate action, especially for developing countries. And so it'll be really interesting to see over the next couple of weeks how that perhaps informs other parts of negotiations or whether countries really take action on the finding of insufficient progress so far.
Yeah, you raise a good point there. And I just want to find out, if we're not on track in terms of reducing our emissions quickly enough, is there any point in, you know, trying to do so if we're possibly not going to meet that 1.5 degree target? Like, why are we still doing this?
That's a good question. I think many people feel that the UNFCCC, this Framework Convention on Climate Change, and the annual conference of the parties that happen under it, you know, oh, they've been happening every year since 1995, and greenhouse gas emissions at a global scale are still going up, and the climate is still warming. So why do we keep having the negotiations that they don't make progress? I think another important way to look at it also is that this is the one really consistent way governments have created to come together and try and develop solutions and action. And it's extremely complicated. It's, I think, over 190 governments, and they largely make decisions by consensus. So there can't be any explicit objections in the room to a decision. And you've got everyone from small island states to rich countries, low-income countries, large countries like China and the United States, much smaller countries, trying to find solutions that work for all of them or give them all space in their national context to do what they need to do to address the climate crisis. So I think in that context, you know, slow progress might be expected on some of that agreement, but there have been these important agreements that set a direction of intention and ambition, like the Paris Agreement. And that set very clear goals and where countries outline some of the steps they need to take to achieve those. So I think it is worth having these negotiations as a way for countries to continue to hopefully maintain trust among each other and to work collectively, because this is a global problem. No one country can solve it by themselves. And so countries really do have to work globally if we are going to limit global warming and avoid the worst effects of climate change.
Yeah, that's a really important point. Like, we do need to work together. And I would also then like to ask, what do you think would be a successful outcome for this COP28?
I think I can't speak around the whole COP because there are many different dimensions of this. But as someone who works on climate change impacts and adaptation, I'd really hope that we see a strong global goal on adaptation with specific targets that have times for achieving them, and that in adaptation in general, there are some positive signals or breakthroughs on providing sufficient financing support, especially for developed countries, to take the adaptation actions they need to protect people, ecosystems, and livelihoods from climate change impacts.
Thanks so much for these insights, Chris. We can keep talking about this, but at some point there has to be action. And for our listeners, I'd also like to encourage you to follow the developments at COP28 on our site. I'll be reporting from the ground from Sunday as part of a group of journalists supported by Media for Environment, Science, Health and Agriculture, as well as the International Development Research Center. Thank you for listening.